What are the most important steps I can take now in the infancy of my company that can help me build a regenerative business that lasts?
Welcome to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We are so excited to thank our new Business Second Opinion sponsor, Guayaki. In fact, I'm drinking a can of their Enlightenment right now. They brew a delicious, enlivening beverage from naturally caffeinated and nourishing leaves from a species of holly that you may know as mate. This is native to South American Atlantic rainforests. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. On top of that, they support community and ecosystem regeneration, bringing together art, music, and celebrations in many locations. Stay up to date on their events at guayaki.com, and we hope you're going to check out this great beverage with your friends and family. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. Ones you may not know you need to be asking, but we think you should. And in the process of examining them, we're going to give you a second opinion. Usually by now, as you know, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So Carol, let's give the people a little dose of what's in store for them today.
Well, we have a request actually from an enthusiastic listener who has been reading my books and has been listening to all our episodes on Business Second Opinion. His name is Peter Nelson, and he's the CEO of Threshold, and it is a startup that helps artists of all kinds, musicians, authors, podcast producers, and anyone else with a fan base, helps them find their fans anywhere around the world and set up events in their fans' home or business base. So not surprisingly, his question is, and wants us to give a second opinion on, what are the most important steps I can take now in the infancy of my company that can help me build a regenerative business that lasts? So as an entrepreneur, he goes on to say, I have only so much time and money, so I want to make sure I'm using the time and money available wisely.
Well, as a co-founder of a startup as well, it started me thinking about day one of actually committing to work on our business. So I was sitting there asking myself the very same question, actually. Unfortunately, with the work that I do with Carol, I knew it wasn't about finding an answer, but it was more about getting a whole and complete approach to thinking critically about that question. So, you know, there's actually this article from Harvard Business Review that I actually think gives some decent direction that we're also going to give a second opinion on today. So it's from the July 2019 Harvard Business Review, and it's by Hermann Tunja and Ken Chenault. But intuitively, as I was reading this, I knew it was missing some things, like a deeper understanding of what actually drove the decisions of these companies that they cite in the article. The entire article also felt a little bit superficial to me and a bit cobbled together, giving the reader broad stroke ideas without coherence. The other issue is that they only used one successful startup and instead resorted to using these huge companies as examples for the ideas they were putting forward. So for me as a founder, it was really hard for me to imagine getting to a scale of like a Disney when I'm more worried about getting to next year, to be honest with you. So it would be great to examine this piece given Peter's question and give a second opinion today, which we're pretty excited to do. So Carol, where do we start?
Well, you're right that this article does have some decent direction setting, but it has our usual paradigm problem. That is that it gets stuck in outdated or incomplete ways of thinking. In parts of their advice, it's a paradigm that is better than the worst kind of stuff. That is the extract value paradigm we talk about all the time that we all agree we should avoid, which is business getting what it thinks it deserves and putting its effort in regardless of the effect it might have on Earth, communities, or even its own consumers. For the most part, this article did avoid the extract value paradigm, which is good. So we can all cheer for that. Most people might even give it as an example of regenerative. But this, I think, has people fooled. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's this section that I'll start off by pointing to for everybody. It's entitled Articulating a Value Framework for Societal Impact, Not Just Financial Return. And this seems to be a blending of a little bit of the extract value paradigm and some do good here as well. Mostly do good, let's say. So they use the example of Intermountain Healthcare, transforming their business model from fee-for-service to value-based, which seems harmless enough. But it's clear that the authors here are in this bit of extract value mindset when they say that Intermountain Healthcare, quote, cannibalized $700 million worth of profits to transform their business. They also noted that, quote, it will take time to measure Intermountain Healthcare's success with this model that they took on. So I think what this is pointing to here is an ability to understand that you don't have to undermine profits to do this, and you can get good earnings and margins at the same time. Particularly when you start from a place of abstract ideas like, quote unquote, society, you stop focusing on how to evolve how you make money to begin with, which is how the paradigm of do good gives us nice intentions without the rigor of needing to make those results concrete.
Yeah, so that's great. I think I understood and saw the same things. And of course, I'm always looking, and I bet you saw some of, if this were going to be regenerative, what would have to get added, at least to give us a start here?
So regeneration, as we've talked about before, but I want to get a little bit of a different take on it here, is about fundamentally building the capabilities of your company's beneficiaries for ongoing evolution. Whether they be customers, suppliers, or employees, they're all nested in the same systems. And so when we're looking through a regenerative lens, the focus of the article would have been more helpful to me if it were about the effects of the business model and the company's beneficiaries, rather than just about sustaining the business and its abstract mission.
Yeah. You know, it occurs to me that you and I have read this article, and it probably would be helpful before we go any further to outline what are the three core pieces of advice they're giving so people can see what we mean by the abstraction and the difficulty in connecting with it in a grounded way. You willing to give us kind of an overview of those points of advice?
Sure. So the first is that they suggest having the business internalize principles and values for society first, which sounds good in theory, but it left me wondering how I as a business owner might actually start to do that. Second, you should be adaptable to change so that the company can make it for the long haul as the world changes around you. Totally agree. You're not going to get any pushback from me on that. But when I think I'm adaptable already, how do I know how to calibrate that effectively? And third, create scalable leadership, driving the values deeply into operations and the orientation of your other leaders and people in the organization in order to ensure that the young leaders as they come up are steeped in the values of the company. But with so many articles and theories of leadership out there, how do I know that I'm actually leading a scalable culture?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It also left me wondering how you have individuals be able to bring something of themselves into that process, because so much of what people do when they follow this kind of advice is they really train everybody who comes through in the values over and over again. That's what SC Johnson did for years. And then they quit training them, and it clearly wasn't embedded in the organization because they started to get in trouble with how they made decisions when they had to have recalls. So what, you know, Zach, as you said earlier, you are a startup, still are. What's missing for you when you ask these same questions that Peter is asking?
Yeah, I mean, I latched on almost immediately to this idea of that they put forward when they use the word society, but they use it as this kind of placeholder for concrete thinking. Also, by the way, using society totally drops out this idea of natural systems, totally drops them out right out of the process. But that aside for a moment, society gives us the feeling of this kind of generic idea or ideal, implying everyone. But who decides what's good for society? Where are the benchmarks? Of course, my business partner and I want to do good for society, but how do we know that we're doing that? And given the polarization of our society in this moment, each side has very different views on this idea. So that generic idea of society leaves me as a business owner feeling frozen, like I have to appeal to everyone.
Yeah. So Zach, what you're pointing out is what I see happen so much with organizations which call themselves mission-driven, purpose-driven, vision-driven, is they have an abstract idea of what that means, but it's very hard to actually make much difference or to know if you're making a difference or to reconcile all the challenges you're talking about. What I think is missing is what jumped out for me or stood out for me It's when you don't know how to examine the paradigm you're thinking through. You end up mixing and matching, as shows up in this article, where we've got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we can't see the confusion that we're creating for people like you who are articulating the experience you're having. And that creates some pretty disturbing experiences in trying to lead. And then I guess I also think that you end up staying blind to your own worldview when you don't know what you're about to produce with what you're writing and advising. For me, it tends to leave out critical aspects of the idea of regeneration. And you've already commented on one of them, like the working aspects of nature and humans. So it drops out nature, but it drops out the idea of how they work as opposed to some fixed ideal about how they are supposed to be, and therefore we would know what to do. And it comes from thinking fragmented and trying to fill in the gaps of, you know, what we can see.
So back to your original question, Carol. So the implications for me as a business owner then trying to take and apply something like this. I feel like if I brought in these three ideas into one of our team meetings, no one would take me seriously. The first thing my team would say is like, Zach, that sounds awesome, but I have no idea what any of that means or how to use any of it. So to be honest with you, Carol, my job's hard enough as it is, so I don't know if I need to walk into a meeting like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It has a bit of the feeling of platitudes, which we hear a lot from folks who are trying to be mission-driven, but let's help people get more grounded in how they would go after this. Because as we started saying, these aren't directionally bad ideas. But when you get this mix of the do good, here, go make these things happen, such as society first, and you mix that up with some other aspects, it does get kind of abstract. The dead giveaway for me was that they've not considered the possibility of regeneration paradigm could give them. So it's leaving so much on the table, such as working from, and this is core to what it means to be regenerative, to work from a specific whole, not a generic abstract one. And therefore, society is not any specific one. You called it a placeholder. And therefore, you can hide many things that are from the old worldview. You know, we talked about the worldview as a machine and behavioral, and then the human potential, which this one is a lot. But it also has thrown in there some of that ordained worldview where kings, queens, popes all made the decision, and even military, for what was right and wrong for society in that era. And it really is a part of an extract value paradigm where someone else is deciding and it's ordained. And therefore, you end up with terms like we see here, like you want to improve your ability to delegate. Well, delegate is from a hierarchical leadership. And you commented on this, which leadership do I follow? And one of the most touted examples is good delegation. But it is a very, very old paradigm. So we got a lot of conflict in paradigms here.
Yikes, Carol. This stuff gets hidden so easily. Maybe we give our listeners a little bit more here actually to dig into, because it feels like it's a bit slippery. So let's start with point one in the article, society first. That does seem to have some good intentions coming from it, as you said, but coming from this kind of do-good paradigm, as you mentioned. A business lasts longer if they use the strategic principle of not just maximizing stakeholder wealth, or growth as a main driver. Okay, I can go along with that. They have a sense of purpose that serves as a conscience. Okay, that feels really good to say. And that would resonate with Peter, I bet. And me, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I bet it would resonate with Peter. There are three challenges I hear. First, who defines economic and social benefits of this societal good? You posed that question early. There are often ideals of one group or class imposed onto another. You got any examples of that, Zach?
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm going to name names here, but I'll say if I look at one company, they might think that social and environmental contribution comes from setting up a foundation after they've made a whole bunch of money and then giving money to causes that they like and feel good about. Another company might say that it has to live this kind of change through the business model itself. But Carol, I've heard you say that it's actually really about an entire community that you might affect. You can't pay attention to just the walls of the business. It has to include the community within which that business is nested.
All right. So we got to spend some, if we're going to follow their advice, we've got to spend some time defining how we're going to know what scale and scope economic and social benefits is. Then secondly, benefits itself is an abstract idea. It's create value for others. How do you know when you've done that?
Yeah, I mean, good question. I think the short answer is we don't know. Who are these others? What is value? These are all questions that are really valuable to explore, but they're written as a bumper sticker. So they drop out any kind of an invitation to think critically. They're an answer rather than a question.
And we're going to give people a process to actually answer that question here in a second. In fact, we're going to make this two podcasts because we felt like this article was so rich. But let's go back to the third idea. So we have the ability or inability to define economic and social, and then the challenge of having a process to figure out how who benefits. And thirdly, are they integrated into the strategy of the business, or do they become add-ons and separated into a department like corporate social responsibility? The fragments that often happen when you start doing this nature of do good is it allows externalities immediately. So we decide what we're going to do is work on rivers because we're near rivers and we affect them. But that doesn't tell us anything about the watershed that we're in, or the life shed, as I call it. So in some degree, we're following the same process the extract value folks do, where we are leaving externalities and that we aren't looking at a whole. So what are the implications of being non-systemic, Zach?
Yeah, great question. So if I start from a fragment, my results will be fragmented, like in philanthropy, for example, right? So philanthropy is seen as a balance for extracting the maximum amount of value and then giving those at the top the ability to feel good after the fact, rather than just designing a business holistically to begin with. But let me ask you, Carol, what would a regenerative paradigm suggest we do here instead?
Yeah, I know. I think that's the question we're building toward. Let me say one more thing about their advice as a prelude to that, is that it has two flaws we've been pointing out over and over again. One is that it's abstract and that it's assumed to be generic. We don't know what exactly it means or where it comes from, but it's true for everybody. Regeneration, on the other hand, is always concrete and always specific. So, for example, the work that we do is helping create what we call global imperatives. Now, that in itself could become an abstraction. But the question is, what's imperative for everything or for the globe to be healthy? It's hard to get the mind to start with that kind of question because we want to start with the ideals of what humans want to do. So every time I try and get people to say, well, what's imperative to have a healthy planet or healthy society, which is different than saying society first. You have a conversation about what is it that makes a healthy society, and you at least within your own company come to some understanding of that. But you don't ask it of what should we be doing, because that's where more corporate responsibility comes from, because it's not asking from standing in the right shoes.
Right.
So it always ends up fragmented. Yeah. Yes, Zach?
No, I was going to say, like, reducing waste. It's funny that I just, like, came up with that, like, automatically. My mind almost immediately wanted to create a list of things to do to, like, waste less right after I said that. But I also see that this is all about kind of doing good. It's funny, we're really conditioned to go there by generations of problem solving. What does it take to switch your regenerative mind, though, Carol?
All right. This is going to sound strange, but you have to switch the shoes you ask the question from. We usually stand in human shoes, therefore, by definition, anthropocentric, and ask, what do we need to be society first or to do good? Here, instead, you want to step into humans and society and natural planetary systems shoes and ask, if we are a planetary system, if we are a planet, if we and work for really defining a whole, and we ask, instead of what do we need to do for it, ask, what can, and don't ask what can humans do to make it better, but instead ask a very different question, like what makes systems, particular systems, therefore concrete, work effectively? So like, what makes democracy work effectively? Now, businesses don't often ask that. They're often looking at some natural system, although that's certainly what dropped out of this article. But they don't ask the question, what does it take for democracy to work? And what's our role as a business? Seventh Generation asked this as a way to get to a social imperative. And they answered, society only works with a well-educated electorate. Now, that's getting us much more concrete. It's also getting us to a specific entity we can work on, which is the electorate. And it is, we believe, or Seventh Generation believe, that it was a nodal place to work. You could change a lot in terms of families, how they work, democracy, how it works, governance, regulation, all if you could have a well-educated electorate. So they work to be specific. And the way they did that is they said, well-educated. We believe that is critical thinking skills and mastery of the thinking so that we are purposeful and not reactive.
So I want to point to this here for a second. Is that something that is specific to make society work? And they made education in those two arenas core to their marketing and sales, if I recall the story behind this. So they took the education you brought to them and invited in their suppliers and customers to work on real business opportunities in a developmental way using these imperatives.
Right. And they were embedded in the engagement they had with suppliers and customers. So you're absolutely right. And then for the planetary imperative, they ask a similar question, not what we should we be doing, get out of the anthropocentric question, but ask what is required by Earth to make her contribution effective. So we've now stood in her shoes, looking at what Mother Earth would say if she had a voice, and say, here's what I do for this ecosystem, and ask what is it that she would be able to do if she could function better in bringing a more whole and systemic way of working. Part of it is she wants to regenerate her function in the face of any disequilibrium that comes along. So that becomes an imperative. Be able to regenerate her ability to function, play her role, contribute in the ecosystem in the face of any disequilibrium, like something stupid humans do. Of course, there's a point at which that goes over the edge. This discussion was an amazing conversation inside of the company. So it wasn't something handed down from on high and passed from one generation of leaders to the next. It was a living discussion to keep asking, what's the imperative for systemic change when things get out of balance? They asked where this was likely to happen, that they affected, you know, that the system in Seventh Generation did. So, and they came up with a lot about their supply system and the forest that they were affecting in Indonesia. But instead of setting up just a different buying practice, so they would buy fair trade or organic or something for their various processes, they set up an education and engagement with their ingredient suppliers, and they created a co-creative lab within their R&D on many ingredients. It helped farmers, because they were involved, to switch practices and even to evolve their crops over time. So it wasn't just, we're going to buy differently. We are going to work on educating people about how this works.
And if I recall correctly, this also worked on adaptability in a more complete way rather than less harm. They measured the whole of forests and crops for their contribution to homeostasis of a local ecosystem. They sought to understand the working of the system when healthy and not just deficiencies or gaps to solve.
Right. And one more thing that regeneration gives us that we miss in this HDR approach, which is that enduring businesses start with and stay with their own essence and the creative and growth process. Now, get in your mind two hands. On one hand, you've got the global imperatives. You've got what a healthy, vital social system like democracy. You could also put in there criminal justice. You could put revenue wealth building, which would be the economy. You could pick any one of those. And on the other hand, you put the essence of the business from all the way back to its founding. And now you imagine that both of those are moving forward together. There's a little missing from there that we would give you, but basically you're going to couple this idea of global imperatives and your essence and with one more thing, which ends up making it much more enduring. The focus of this article ends up with the do good idea we just spoke to, but it leaves out, and here's the thing you have to add, the ability to differentiate yourself, which is core. You're not just interested in following the trends, following what it is that's going on in the market. No, you have to speak to that and to the global imperatives from who you uniquely are, not by market surveys, but by deeply understanding who you are from the launch of the startup. So if I had to say one thing you better pay attention to as a startup, Peter, is knowing who in the world you are and revealing that, not deciding on it. Essence is the most important factor in the ability to be enduring, because otherwise you get shifted by the trends, you get pulled as global imperatives grab your attention, well, or more as when they become statements about what we ought to be doing for best practices. When it's coupled with the concrete specific global imperatives and a regenerative market positioning process, you're going to have a stable triad of your essence, the global imperatives and market positioning.
Of course, this also speaks to the adaptability suggestion they make, which actually makes me a little bit nervous as advice when I think about it. Since most understanding of change to which we need to adapt comes from tracking emerging trends, which Carol touched on earlier, that seems to put our eye on the wrong ball, I think. The changes without a framework can come easily become distractions and turn into a guessing game about how to respond to which trend. And if we always start from our essence, though, we know what to pay attention to and we can uniquely respond.
Yeah, and we can direct trend responses on our part. Even we can help educate, advise, and evolve global citizens about what they see as possible. But again, we have to keep standing in our own shoes. We can educate people about how it is they can deal with themselves with the trends which are coming. You know, Apple could see what would come next and could come next would be their question also. When their engineers were in living, particularly with students, and watched how they were playing with not technology per se, but with their craft or with their science, like music and research, they watched how they went after that, how they made their own hacks. And then they ask, what is our unique take on that here at Apple? So we see all that going on. That's trends. We could then make a list. But for our specific buyers who were more defined as the complex creatives with artistic and scientific pursuits. So they ask, you know, what is our unique take on that? And design a system that can help evolve what they're trying to do and all aspects of it in a unified way. But it started with knowing who they were, who Apple was, who Steve Jobs was, and Steve Wozniak was before they considered changes, who their buyers were, that they needed to understand, and what the essence told them about how they were to respond, which led to some pretty elegant design for those creative people.
So for today, we've challenged the first two pieces of advice, society first and be adaptable, which are definitely better than not having them at all, but don't go to the heart of the most enduring advice here. So think of it this way. In a regenerative paradigm, we try to move from abstract generic ideas like mission statements for a better society to concrete, specific global imperatives with our specific role in them where we can have the most impact. And from adaptability to change to starting with our essence where we understand the working of a system and how we can uniquely contribute to it.
Yes, and there are a few other ideas we'd love to put forward here, which triggered in looking at this article based on Peter's question. And we're going to bring you a part two on this. Next time, we'll look at other questions that elevate the idea of enduring to what might be called non-displaceable, because that's what really triggers Peter's question is, how in the world are we not displaced over time? And we'll also take on this idea of scalability of leadership. That means, you know, or spoke to at least a system of leadership. You know, that's a particularly seductive idea. I really want to bring some light to the word system. Doesn't that sound good? But we want to help clear that up and give some regenerative grounding to it.
Thank you so much for today, Carol. This is really enlightening. There are many resources to help develop the mind that can see and work with the four paradigms, which we just pointed out, which can help you overcome the challenges of a less regenerative paradigm, especially the tendencies towards projecting one's group's ideals onto another group and the creation of abstractions that lead to generic solutions and further degenerate practices.
Yeah, for a start, let's put the paradigm graphic that we've been speaking about today into the show notes. It always helps, I think, to have the visual of it. But also, if you're a business, we want to invite you to consider joining the Regenerative Business Development Community, which has dozens of leaders working together. Some are our sponsors here, where you can apply regenerative thinking to your personal business and get the details that are behind a lot of what we offer on Second Opinion and can only do so much in half an hour. There in that community, we use living systems principles as they apply to producing regenerative strategy, regenerative leadership, and regenerative work design when you're working on developing human beings. Plus, another thing you may want to get engaged in that has free education behind those who make it through the first round. That means we just ask you to be serious about what you submit, to nominate yourself or another business for the Regenerative Business Prize. As a result of stepping into that flow that goes through a few months, we help you upgrade what you're doing through a series of panelists who review it, who are in our community, and give you back reflections on what they think could help you get more integrity around the seven first principles. There's a tab on the Regenerative Business Summit website page that will lead to the prize. And I think you can actually put in the Regenerative Business Prize and get there directly. But the important thing is we are open for submissions now until the end of March. There's a timetable on the summit page and on the prize page. So download everything that's there, the guidelines, the rubric for the prize, and learn how you can get your organization more in line with what regeneration means. Just let me give one more thing, Zach. There are many other ways to join, from buying books in bulk and joining book clubs with me. You're able to engage that way in making deeper sense of what's in the books. Or you can join one of the 9 regenerative life communities that's coming out of my new book, The Regenerative Life, which will be out in March 10th. So you can check out more details on that bulk buys, the book clubs, the regenerative life communities, if you go to carolsanford.com/offerings. The first one you ought to check out if you're a woman is the Regenerative Women Entrepreneurs Community, which has openings. It's under seed-communities.com.
And thanks to our new sponsors, Guayaki, and your pursuit of regeneration with great integrity. Also, we're sending Peter Nelson a Get a Second Opinion mug to hold your favorite hot or cold beverage. If you want one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your article and topics on practices and business that you need a second opinion on. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. It's that easy. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform help people find us and spread the word. Also, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter so you can get connected to the show notes and much more.
We are now welcoming Business Second Opinion champions who can make smaller contribution to help cover our production costs. You can find that in the show notes and more explanation about how to join as a champion. I should say, Zach and I love doing this podcast. I mean, we have so much fun. It forces our thinking to grow and extend and engaging with all of you. But the current sponsors that we have cover less than 10% of the cost. And we want to avoid advertising if at all possible. So be a champion and we will add that mug for you also if you join at the premium level champion.
And thanks as always to NumiT. They sponsor our show notes and also Babson College for sponsoring the Regenerative Business Summit. Check out their Business Second Opinion website for more info on our podcast. And also don't forget to join NumiT as a champion at the Regenerative Business Summit. This has been Business Second Opinion.